you know, Silicon Valley used to be kind of the darling of the world, I think, until probably pretty recently, several years ago. And then people started feeling like, well, maybe this technology stuff isn't all good. And there was an article several years ago that said that Silicon Valley is the new Rome, this kind of global empire that has reaches as far as you could imagine that just funnels wealth back to its center.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Pastor Theologian Show. Today, our guest is Paul Taylor, who is a teaching pastor and elder at Peninsula Bible Church in Palo Alto, California. We're going to be talking with Paul today about the intersection between technology, theology, and pastoral ministry. Also, just as an FYI, Todd is away for this conversation, so I am going to be doing the interview with Paul myself, but don't worry, Todd will be back for our next set of episodes after this one. All right, enjoy the conversation. Paul, thanks so much for joining us on the Pastor Theologian Show today. To get started, why don't you just introduce yourself briefly, say what you're doing now for your work and ministry and where you're at, and then we can maybe go back and talk a little bit about your story, but why don't you just start by briefly introducing yourself?
Yeah, Paul Taylor. I'm a teaching pastor and elder at Peninsula Bible Church, which is in Palo Alto, California. Been here about 12 years, and about a year and a half ago, I started up an effort to explore more intentionally the intersection of theology with technology called allthingsnew.tech.
Okay.
That's kind of the basics.
Great. And we got connected maybe a month and a half, couple months back. Here at the Center for Pastor Theologians, we host an annual theology conference. And our theme this year is technology, a Christian vision of technology. So you had reached out just because you were interested in the theme, interested in potentially getting involved, and we got to talking and seemed like it was a good connection and had a good conversation. So looking forward to just having you on the show to talk about some of those same ideas.
Sure.
Just to start, When you were growing up, maybe tell just briefly a little bit about growing up, and specifically when you discerned your call to ministry and pastoral ministry. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I grew up in the church, grew up in a Lutheran church, and I think I always say I think I kind of believed as a kid that ideas made sense to me, but the practice didn't really click as much. And when I was a sophomore in high school, my family moved from Connecticut to Houston, Texas, which was a move that I wasn't particularly excited about, but God really used it because we did what good Lutherans do, and we visited the various Lutheran churches in Houston and tried to find one that was a good fit, and happened to find one that was had a youth pastor who had just moved to Houston from Maryland. And so he and I had this kind of East Coast people trapped in the South vibe going. And that was where my faith came alive. And then it was probably about a year later where it was not particularly remarkable, but I was at a youth trip and it was in the middle of communion. And I just kind of felt God saying, you should be a pastor. I should say that my grandfather was a Lutheran minister. He passed away before I was born. But I grew up kind of with this question that my aunts and uncles would ask me of, do you want to be a pastor like your grandfather? Hmm. To which I would resoundingly say, no, why would I want to bore people for a living? That was kind of the way I thought about it, a professional boredom. But I think what it did was it created a category in my mind of being a pastor. You know, nobody ever asked me growing up, do you want to be a fireman or anything like that. But people asked me that. So I thought about it long enough to reject it. And then I think when my faith came alive in high school, God just quietly said, okay, that question you've been saying no to for years, it's turned to a yes. And that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Talk a little bit more about that move from, you know, the Northeast to the buckle of the Bible Belt.
Yeah.
What was like the, in terms of church and culture, what were some of the dynamics going on there?
You know, I think it was interesting because it wasn't actually that remarkable. One of the effects, I think, of being within a denomination, and particularly the Lutheran Church, at least my experience in the Lutheran Church, we were a little bit isolated from the kind of evangelical experience. And so I'd never heard of a quiet time until I got to college. And so kind of going from a Lutheran church in Connecticut to a Lutheran church in Houston, I think was actually less of a significant change than if I'd been part of kind of the larger evangelical world at the time.
Yes.
But it did make me feel pretty convinced that I did not want to do ministry in the South. when I kind of became, you know, when I felt the call to ministry, I didn't really love the idea in the South that everybody kind of ought to be Christian. And so then when I came out to California, I came out here for college, I found it so refreshing that you could ask people, do you believe in God? And they just answered. There was no sense that they ought to answer one way or the other. And you could have what I felt like were more authentic conversations with people than in the South, where there was kind of an expectation that you should believe in God. So if you don't, you're already doing something wrong. And that just made conversations so complicated because there's shame and guilt and all of that involved.
So talk a little bit about college and then what you studied and what happened after that.
Yeah. So when I decided to go into ministry, when I felt that call, for me anyway, there were kind of two paths that I saw opening up before me, knowing that there were many others, but the ones that made sense to me were one, to go to a Lutheran college and then go to Lutheran seminary and become a pastor. That was kind of path A. But I was going to a pretty good prep school in Houston, and my siblings had gone to very competitive colleges, and I thought there was a good chance I could go to kind of a competitive college. And I kind of had my eyes on Stanford out here in California. And so the other path was kind of, if I go to a place like Stanford, then could I work for a few years in some field, kind of the real world, before then going into ministry? And when I would talk to people about those options, pretty much universally, people would affirm the idea that kind of having some experience in the real world would be a benefit. So that's what I did. I came to Stanford and pursued a degree in industrial engineering, which I always, you know, it was the easiest of the engineering degrees by far. So we called it imaginary engineering because it just wasn't as much work as the real engineers, like the computer scientists and the electrical engineers. But after graduating, then I got a job with a software company working for Oracle as a product manager, and did that then for about 7 years before going into ministry.
So the advice that you got about some real world experience was the thought that would serve you, like, would you be a better pastor because you had real world experience? Was that the idea behind that advice? And have you found that to be true looking back?
Yeah, I think that was the idea behind that advice, but it's not as if, you know, I have no qualms with people that go straight to seminary, become pastors.
Right, I mean, absolutely not.
I mean, not to discount that path at all, but for me, I think the kind of uniqueness of my situation, people recognize that, yeah, that would be of benefit. And I have, if nothing else, just maybe I just needed to be humbled, because when I thought of that path, my kind of mentality was, I'm going to go work in the real world and kind of figure it out and then be a pastor and tell everybody else how to do it. And that was certainly very arrogant to think that I could figure it out in a couple of years. And so if anything, I think got a great sense just of the complexity of life, working next to people, working in a cubicle, having conversations, trying to build relationships within the unique constraints of a professional environment that allows for certain kind of relationships but not others. And then being in this area, in the Bay Area, where technology is such a powerful cultural influence, I do think having a background working in technology has given me just some life experience that allows me to connect. I know
some street cred.
Yeah, I know a little bit. I have a legitimacy that to speak into some areas that maybe some other people don't.
Yeah. That's great. So you never, did you do waiver ever during those 7 years where you were, you know, studying and then out in the marketplace and you're like, maybe I could just do this and that pastoral ministry thing was a great idea, but maybe I'll just kind of stick this out. Did that ever occur to you or not really?
It did. I mean, and it sounds more glamorous than it is. I don't feel like when I felt the call, I mean, I discerned that I was headed towards pastoral ministry, but I didn't feel like I had made a vow to God or,
right,
you know, some, yeah, type of thing that if I broke, I would have sacrificed my faith. So along the way, I still kind of felt like all paths were open, but I was kind of gearing towards working for several years and then doing ministry. I was fortunate enough to join a product team that was releasing an early product, and I was kind of on the ground floor when the team tripled in size, so that about 3 years into working, I was able to cut back to half time and work remotely while I went to seminary, which was a huge benefit. So that the decisions like that just kind of confirmed along the way that this was a good path.
So then what seminary did you end up going to at that time?
So I went to Dallas Theological Seminary. We had, we still have, my wife and I have family in Texas, and I had kind of sensed I didn't want to end up in Texas, but we had just had our first child, and the idea of being close to family when we were having kids was really appealing. And I really loved what I really wanted from seminary was biblical background, and I loved the language department at Dallas and the thorough biblical approach they take.
Yeah. So you're at seminary, still working part-time as a software engineer. Yeah. What was that like?
You know, it was good. I actually had a good friend of mine who was basically doing the exact same thing. He worked for a software company out here, and we both went to Dallas at the same time. We both worked part-time for tech companies. And the worst part about it was that the things I liked about my job were working with people. And now I was working remotely and just kind of producing stuff, which wasn't very interesting. So it wasn't, it actually got very boring, and I kind of lost my interest in the technology. But you know, a lot of my friends in seminary were throwing boxes for UPS or cleaning pools. And so complaining about being bored in my little air-conditioned home office seemed not appropriate at the time.
Hey, everybody. Just a quick note about our annual conference here at the Center for Pastor Theologians. This year's topic is Techne, a Christian vision of technology. And we will be hosting this conference in Chicago on October 14th to 16th, 2019. We have a lot of great speakers lined up, including Andy Crouch, Pastor Charlie Dates, Karen Swallow Pryor, and a great lineup of pastors, scholars, academic theologians, and sociologists, as well as tech experts. It's going to be a great set of conversations, and I encourage you to go to our conference website, cptconference.com, to learn more and to register. Let's get right back into our conversation with Paul Taylor. So you mentioned the languages and the biblical backgrounds stuff while you were at Dallas. What was that, Old Testament, New Testament, all of the above? Like, what were some of the things you found particularly stimulating while you were studying there? And what was the degree? Was it an MDiv? Was it a...
It's a THM, Master's of Theology.
THM, okay.
I really loved the language, both Hebrew and Greek. I think I really enjoyed Hebrew somewhat more so than Greek, simply because it felt newer. Greek mm-hmm. felt more similar to a kind of a Romance language. It was very precise, very, very understandable. You could, you know, it's more of an engineering kind of language. It fit that, but mm-hmm. Hebrew just felt like a different world. So I felt like the way it was vocalized and the way the accents worked and the you have to think differently to read Hebrew, and that really appealed to me. I enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, I resonate with that as well. There was something about like the rewiring of your brain to kind of get inside the Hebrew linguistics it's very much another world.
Yeah.
Whereas Greek feels kind of like, oh, this feels like some ancient ancestor to my Western culture and Western linguistics in some way. But Hebrew, I resonate with that completely. It feels foreign in a different way, that can be really stimulating or really intimidating, depending on how you.
It was both. It was definitely harder to learn, but yeah, just the sense that when you're, you know, to learn the language is to learn the culture in some sense and to immerse yourself in it. So that was powerful.
Yeah, and I also found with Hebrew, when I was learning Hebrew, the learning curve is a little steeper. Like with Greek, with Koine Greek, you can if you're studying hard, you can kind of reach a plateau after not too long, maybe a semester or so of good study. Then you're reading in the Gospel of John, you're reading in 1 John, right, and you're feeling pretty good about yourself, and you're like, this is good. But Hebrew, you kind of got to stick with it before you feel like you can read anything with any agency in the Old Testament. So you got to persevere. So I guess if you're studying Hebrew, there are riches to be harvested. You just got to keep going.
Indeed, I agree.
So then talk about after you finished up at Dallas and you ended up back in the Bay Area. How did that come about?
So I'd actually started attending my church, Peninsula Bible Church, when I was a freshman in college, and attended it all through college. Attended it
back when you were at Stanford.
That's right. Yeah, we're only a few miles from Stanford, and then attended for a couple of years after graduating. My wife and I were newly married, and we participated in a intern kind of lay training program that the church offers. So we did a 2-year, pretty extensive program in that before going to seminary, and I was pretty well connected with several of the leadership at the church. And so I kept in regular contact with them while I was in seminary. And then when I was kind of getting ready to graduate, there was a position opening up for the college ministry, a college pastor position. And I'd been in college while I was at the church. I'd volunteered in college ministry. I was an intern in college ministry. So I think it was a pretty good fit all around for me to step into that role. And I in the back of my mind, I love the Bay Area. I feel a calling here that's very strong. And when you leave the Bay Area, you just assume it's a one-way ticket because it is so impossible to live here financially. But the Lord really provided through some unique ways for me to be able to come back and get my wife and I in a house so that we have some stability here. And that just feel like that is such a blessing for us to be able to minister here in such a unique part of the world.
Yeah, so talk a little more about that. What makes the Bay Area so compelling and unique to you, and why is it a rich place to do ministry in particular?
Yeah, I mean, the area is incredible. Just the geography, the weather, the people, the culture, everything I love about it. The pace of life is pretty, can be soul-crushing, but I'm not sure that that's all that different in other parts of the country. Yeah. In terms of ministry, you know, I've heard it said that there are kind of three big centers of industry in the U.S. right now: the financial industry in New York, the entertainment industry in L.A., and the technology industry in the Bay Area. And if you're kind of looking for which industry is making the most significant cultural impact globally, you know, it's probably an arguable point, but the technology industry is certainly a good case to be made that what's happening in this part of the world, I mean, is just affecting everybody. I've traveled to Kenya and to India, and I tell people I live a mile from Google headquarters, and they're just amazed. I mean, everybody knows Google, everybody knows Facebook, Apple. Yes. So it's the reach of the companies in this area and the kind of work that's being done here is so, so powerful.
So is that in terms of gospel, is that just strategic then, and being in a?
Yeah, I think absolutely.
Is it especially? Maybe this wouldn't be fair to say, but like I've spoken at some length with people ministering in the LA area, and the cultural kind of just significance for that part of the country, with the entertainment industry in particular, is kind of the world you step into when you try to do ministry.
Right.
Those are the gods of Babylon that you're speaking out against.
That's right.
Is there a similar dynamic in the Bay Area with technology, would you
say? Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, every city, every culture has influence, and it's not to put one above the other, but I've continually felt called here, and the comparisons with Rome, I think, are pretty uncanny in a way. In fact, one of the technologists that I've spent some time with is Pat Gelsinger, who's the CEO of VMware, and he likes to say that the Roman world connected the Romans connected people through their roads, some percentage of the population that had never been accomplished before. And the only parallel to that is how technology is connecting people today, that the number of people that are connected to each other on the internet is kind of a direct analog to how Rome connected the world through its roads.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a lot of compelling ideas. In fact, even that, you know, Silicon Valley used to be kind of the darling of the world, I think, until probably pretty recently, several years ago. And then people started feeling like, well, maybe this technology stuff isn't all good. And there was an article several years ago that said that Silicon Valley is the new Rome. And it was very, very powerful, really kind of suggesting that all the good that Rome did, but also some of the harm that mm-hmm. Rome did was really, has really kind of found its way. And so there's a great quote about kind of Silicon Valley drawing resources back to itself, basically for its own benefit, which is really what Rome did as well. This kind of global empire that has reaches as far as you could imagine that just funnels wealth back to its center, benefiting its citizens at some of the expense of others. And I think that's a savvy description of Silicon Valley, which is all the more reason why they need God and why ministry is so important here and has yeah. potential to be really culturally significant.
Yeah. I mean, and that's where Paul targeted his ministry
that's
in
right.
the New Testament.
Yeah.
It was oriented towards Rome.
Yeah.
So when did you become interested in the intersection between technology and theology in particular? Was that going on while you were at seminary, or was that a bit later when you were back in the Bay Area? When did some of those questions kind of start being raised for you?
Yeah, I've always been kind of a techie. I've always been interested in new tech and had the latest phone and those kinds of things. I'm an avid user of tech. The real interest in the overlap came about 2 years ago, actually almost exactly 2 years ago. We do a thing at our church called Theology Roundtables, which are basically just lectures on kind of contemporary theological issues. So we've done them on all sorts of topics. And I kind of had the idea that it would be a good idea to do one on the theology of technology without really knowing if there was a theology of technology, but thinking that could sound interesting. So kind of put it on the calendar, and then I had to figure out what to say. And so I read several books and did some research. And the response to that event among people, I mean, it just felt like, you know, offering a glass of water to a thirsty person. People just said, oh, this is wonderful. We need more of this. Like, I think there's this deep awareness that theology is changing, or technology is changing our world in such rapid and significant ways. And Christians aren't really ahead of the curve. We're not thinking intentionally enough about what is happening and what is our responsibility amidst the change. So that led to it was kind of that lecture, and then the response from it, a couple of discussion groups where I gathered some people to have conversations, and then a handful of people kind of came around me and said, let's do something with this. And so we started this effort called allthingsnew.tech. And it began, we're a Bible church, so my bread and butter is just teaching the Bible. So I figured, you know, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to teach the Bible and look at it with the lens of technology. So I said, I'll start in Genesis 1:1, and I lead this men's group on Wednesday mornings that's kind of up for theological journeys. And so I said, we're just going to start Genesis 1:1. I'm going to stop every time I see something that makes me think of technology, and we'll do some biblical and theological exploration of it. And in my mind, I thought, oh yeah, you know, Tower of Babel, that's probably technology, and maybe the cross, like that's actually a technology of execution. And I had a few kind of things in the back of my mind I thought we'd get to. But it took about 6 months to get through Genesis 3 and then eventually had to stop so that we could move on to something a little different, give people some variety.
But yeah, yeah, yeah.
But those were the, then those talks turned into the first kind of blog articles for allthingsnew.tech. And then people told me, oh, nobody reads anymore. So, you know, stop writing. You need to do a podcast and like we're doing now. And I think being in the Bay Area, knowing a lot of people and being fairly well connected, I had access to some technologists and thought, okay, that's great. I can sit down and talk with them. So I've been hosting some conversations with them. I just finished one this morning with the CEO of Five Stars, who's a really neat Christian guy. And it's been amazing to see how Christians in tech have thought about their work, not just professionally, but theologically. And I think that's what I'd love to spur on, is more theological reflection about technology.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to today's episode. Be sure to tune in next time for part two of our conversation with Paul Taylor. Thank you for listening to this episode of the CPT Podcast, a theology podcast for the church. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider throwing us a like, sharing the podcast online, subscribing, leaving a review. Anything like that would go a long way towards helping other people hear about the podcast. The CPT Podcast is a ministry of the Center for Pastor Theologians. You can learn more about the CPT by visiting us at pastortheologians.com. You can also find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Our host for today's episode was Todd Wilson. Our producer and editor was Trenton Jones. Our music was composed by Andrew Gerlacher. I'm Zach Wagner. Thanks for listening.